Blog Talk Radio.
Here we go, Draft Knicks. Here we go. Welcome to another edition of the Draft Nation. My name is Joe412, and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes. Before we begin, we want to thank our sponsor, longtime sponsor, iHeartMedia, where you can find all your favorite music, radio, and podcasts all for free. And for those of you who have not listened to our show before, Draft Nation is a national e-magazine that hyper-focuses on all four major sports and their professional drafts. And we cover all aspects of that, which include things like player scouting, mock drafts, free agency, of course, everybody's favorite salary cap provisions, and the needs of your favorite teams. And before we drop the puck tonight, we're going to be talking a lot about hockey. We have a very special guest, Scott Burnside. And I know many of you will recognize that name, but Scott, welcome to Draft Nation. And are you ready to go on the clock?
I'm pumped. I've been thinking about this all day. So, no, I'm ready to roll. I hope I'm up to the challenge, but thanks for having me aboard.
It's my pleasure. Why don't you tell everybody a little bit about yourself? You've got a pretty extensive resume. We're really happy to have you on the show.
Well, it's kind of you to say that's a function of being old, but that's all right. But no, I've been covering hockey for a long time now. I was a news guy for quite some time. Actually, one of the sort of trivial parts or a trivia question, I suppose. At one point, I helped co-author a true crime book when I was working at the Toronto Sun, and shortly after that, started in sports and have been covering mostly hockey since the late 1990s. My first NHL gig, I was the sports columnist in Windsor, Ontario, covered back-to-back cup wins for the Red Wings in 97 and 98, and then moved on to mostly national stuff from that point on. And, I've knocked around a while. I've managed to make it to three Olympic Games, a couple of World Cup of Hockeys, lots and lots of drafts. So I'm happy to be here and pumped to talk a little hockey with you.
Yeah, you know, and last year's draft was in Nashville, and I didn't think it could get much better than that, but this year's in Vegas, so it's hard to complain, right? So, but let's talk NHL for a while here. I know we've got a lot of fans of the sport that listen, and, you know, we're around the halfway mark of the season. Who has surprised you the most, and who has disappointed you the most?
Yeah, it's such a great question. Now, I'll tell you, the NHL, it's so different this year, and maybe we've been trending this way for 4 or 5 years, and, you know, we call it the mushy middle. But there are, I think, fewer elite teams, using my air quotes here, teams that you look at and you say, okay, that's, you know, a year ago Boston was on a record-setting pace, and, of course, it ended up with the most regular season points in NHL history. And, of course, it mattered not because they were done after 7 games against Florida. But, you know,
right.
you looked at the Boston Bruins a year ago and you said, okay, that's a team. Okay, let's pencil them into at least a conference final, probably a Stanley Cup final. Who is going to beat them? I don't know that we have that this year. For Canadian listeners or fans, the top two teams – you know, points percentage-wise, and I think you could argue level of play for the last 3 or 4 weeks, the Vancouver Canucks and the Winnipeg Jets, and two teams, you know, the joke will always be, oh, my gosh, what happens if Vancouver and Winnipeg are in a Western Conference final? People in New York at the NHL head offices won't like that matchup very well for the ratings. But what two redemptive stories for franchises, that have been – either A, dysfunctional, or B, underachieving, or C, a combination of the both. And what great stories for those marketplaces with Winnipeg and Vancouver. Colorado's a really good team. I am going to answer your question, Joe, but I'm sort of building to it now. I think
I got it. It's okay.
For me, and I know they're getting waxed tonight, but, you know, the Philadelphia Flyers, new hockey management in place there. Guys I've had a chance to spend a lot of time with over the years, and Danny Briere, the new GM, and the new head of hockey ops, Keith Jones, and, you know, who anybody who's ever watched or listened to any hockey over the last 20 years, everyone knows, certainly both those guys, but Keith Jones through his broadcast career. And they've been very bold in Philadelphia. They've made some moves recently, bringing in Jamie Drysdale, a top-end defensive prospect for Anaheim, after their top offensive prospect, Cutter Gauthier, decided he didn't want to be a Philadelphia Flyer. So that made people
Philly
unhappy.
What a crazy story. What an absolutely crazy story. We'll get into that. But I didn't mean to interrupt you.
But to me, it's part of that whole, there has been a real rekindling of the passion in Philadelphia for this team. You know, as we're talking right now, they're in second place in the Metropolitan Division. I don't think anyone imagined that. I think a lot of people imagined maybe a lottery pick team again this year, certainly not a playoff caliber team. And I don't know, maybe, you know, they're hitting a bit of a rough patch now. I watched their game against Colorado on the weekend, and, you know, a lot of really good young players, and I love how John Tortorella coaches that team. Guys are in and out of the lineup. You know, Morgan Frost, who's a really talented player, you know, he's a healthy scratch, but that's how John Tortorella coaches. So that's part of the process in Philadelphia. It's an evolution there. I hate that term, but it really is. But the Flyers are ahead of the curve there. And in the Western Conference, I think the Vancouver Canucks, you know, it's a team that's had, you know, changed coaches and changed management. It's a very weird market. They kind of eat their own in Vancouver in terms of the media, and it's a really crazy place. But Rick Tocchet, oh my gosh, the job that he has done in a brief period of time since taking over, you know, sort of towards the end of last season, I'm so pleased for Rick Tocchet, who is such a good person, and I think has been waiting for a chance to show that he does have elite coaching chops, and he certainly has that in Vancouver. So they'd be probably my pick in the West. And, you know, a little disappointing, you know, Calgary Flames and Seattle Kraken, both teams that I think a lot of people liked as the playoffs are in that sort of mushy middle. Minnesota Wild, I provided content for the Wild on a number of platforms over the last year and a half or so, and just crushed by injuries right out of the gate. Made a coaching change there, and John Hines took over for Dean Evason. But it's you know, tough going for the Minnesota Wild. And in the Eastern Conference, the Ottawa Senators, for me, a team that, you know, people have been waiting for a long time to jump up. They've got all kinds of talent. New ownership, change in management. Steve Staios, who was a terrific guy as a player and a really smart player, has turned into a smart executive, comes in and is now the GM and will run the hockey ops with Dave Poulin, another, you know, longtime player and very, very smart hockey mind. But that's a Senators team that, it's just taken a long time, right? They're, you know, at the bottom of the Eastern Conference standings. They're not going to make the playoffs again. And, it's been a tough go for them there. But, boy, there are a lot of good players. And hopefully they get it right. They'll have to find a coach. Jacques Martin is not going to be the guy after this season. So that's the key part now. You've got to find the guy who can coach that young team back to respectability. That's a long answer. I hope I haven't bored you.
Not at all. In fact, I mean, there's a lot to unpack there, and I'm glad you brought up a couple of real salient points there, and I'll get into them as I go through it. I mean, I have to agree with you. If you were looking at my notes for the show, I mean, I think you hit on all of the same teams that I was going to talk about. And, you know, I'll start with the East. I mean, Philadelphia's got to be the big surprise, but I do think I'm not sure they could sustain. Like, they look like they're – like, I honestly think they don't want to sustain. I mean, they want to be a lottery pick. I'd be surprised if they do stay where they are. I don't think that was the plan. And with Mishkov being a couple of years away, I'm not sure this team is ready to do this. They might be a one and done. They might not. I don't know. I mean, I feel like they're a paper tiger and that one day the wheels are going to just come off of it. They're just too early. Right? They're arriving a year or two too early, I think. And then Ottawa, what a disappointment. I mean, just a kick in the teeth disappointment. Everybody, they were struggling. I read on the bubble last year and people expected so much from them. But, you know, I'll tell you what, the pleasant surprise is Vancouver. I mean, Rick Tocchet, I had the pleasure of watching him play as a Penguin and then also having him coach here during the last couple of Stanley Cup runs with the Pens. And, you know, he's one of those guys that I would have loved to have seen stick around here, but he's doing a hell of a job out in Vancouver. And, you know, if you would have asked me on either of the cases before the season started, hey, this year we've got Winnipeg versus Vancouver and we've got Philadelphia in and Ottawa out, I would have thought you were smoking crack. Like, there's no way. There's just absolutely no way. And yet again, here we are. Now, we're only a little over halfway through the season, and we're, you know, so there's a lot of hockey to be played. But, you know, where we're trending here, we're getting close. We're not there yet, but we're about 6 weeks away from the NHL trade deadline. You know, March 8th is going to come up real quick. And there are some teams out there that, especially my Penguins, that people are already, you know, kind of rubbing their hands together and seeing how they can peel Jake Guentzel away or, you know, an Erik Karlsson for the right deal or grab Tristan Jarry. And there's a lot of teams that are like that too. They're, like you said, the mushy middle, they're in on that bubble. Do you expect a lot of trades this year? I know some years there's plenty and other years it's like crickets. What do you expect to see as we get closer to the trade deadline? Who's definitely going to move and where are they going to land?
Yeah, don't you automatically have to say, oh, there's going to be dozens of trades. That way listeners and fans and subscribers stick around, right? Because you're right. I mean, there is this – it's such an exciting time because, you know, fans are – you know, it's the opportunity. It's that brief window, and you think maybe your team's a playoff team, and if you just added that one piece and, you know, if you got – if you got Erik Karlsson at the trade deadline or a Jake Guentzel at the trade deadline, you know, what does that do for your team? You know, and I think, you know, Ryan O'Reilly wasn't a trade deadline guy, but the history of the NHL is filled with guys who come in and make a difference and they become that missing part. I will tell you though, that probably when you get out the big NHL ledger book, there are far more disappointments or far more trade deadline moves that don't pan out. And that's, you know, but there's a certain amount of expectation. It's not just from the fans. I think it's from the dressing rooms, right? Like, so if you're the Boston Bruins and as we speak today, they're the top team in the NHL, you know, I do think there's a certain amount of pressure on that organization as much as their salary cap situation will allow, maybe to bring in some veteran depth down the middle, maybe add another defenseman. You know, I think there is pressure every year on those elite teams. It's not just to make your own team better, which is, of course, is the ultimate goal, but it's also not to be lapped by your opponents. And I'll give you a great example. Carolina is another team I've done some content for over the last couple of years. And Don Waddell, the GM there, had all kinds of cap room last year. He brought in Shane Gostisbehere to bulk up the defense. Max Pacioretty, who had only played a handful of games and suffered a second Achilles injury, was hurt. And almost immediately after the trade deadline, Andrei Svechnikov went down with a knee injury and was lost for the rest of the season. Now, this is a Hurricanes team that went to an Eastern Conference final. To me, they remain one of the elite teams in the NHL. But at the end of the day, you're like, geez, if we had been able to, you know, nab and you know, whatever the name is, Vladimir Tarasenko, you know, whatever the name is, even, you know, maybe someone down the free agent or the rental roster, maybe it makes a difference in a very close series that the Canes needed a couple critical goals and ended up getting swept by upstart Florida in the Eastern Conference final. So, you know, there is a lot of pressure. And I do think there will be a fair amount of movement. The problem is, and I think this goes back to last year, when you look at a team like Florida, that, and, you know, for Pittsburgh fans, I hate to bring this up, right? Pittsburgh wins a game against Chicago in game 81. Chicago's a bad team. You win that game, we aren't even having a conversation about Matthew Tkachuk and the Florida Panthers. It doesn't happen that way. Panthers get in, stun the Bruins, beat the Leafs, beat the Canes, run out of gas in the final against Vegas. But I think that's the danger then for a team, and especially a team like Pittsburgh that is so veteran-laden. You've got a lot of, you know, you've got a lot of history to deal with. You don't have a lot coming through the pipeline. You're in a bit of a hard spot. Washington in very much the same spot, maybe a little bit further down the transition road than the Penguins, but same thing, right? You got Ovechkin, TJ Oshie, and John Carlson. You know, do you give them, you know, what do you do to try and give them another shot? Of course, both those teams missed the playoffs last year. Both those teams, as we speak today, out of the playoff picture. But it does put pressure on management to say, well, okay, can we afford Jake Guentzel? He's at $6 million now, come to the end of his current deal. What's this team look like if we miss the playoffs for the second year in a row? And how do you start the process of trying to bring in good young players who will evolve into the next generation, right? And Jake Gensel's not that guy. He's 29. So, you know, if you think you win a cup, you don't even think about it and you just keep going. He does have a 12-team no-trade list, according to Cap Friendly. So he does control some of his own destiny. But Gensel's a great example of this. What do you do with, you know, Erik Karlsson? You know, he's just been there for a month, it feels like. Do you approach him? Does he want to go somewhere else? I think of a guy like Patrick Kane, he's not playing right now. He's hurt. He's been pretty good, though, coming off hit surgery for the Detroit Red Wings, but he's also on an expiring contract. If the Red Wings fall out of it, as we're speaking tonight, they're getting crushed by Dallas. I don't think they're ready to be in the playoffs, but who knows? Does Patrick Kane find himself on the move again? So, I think it will remain very much a moving target until March 8th. There will be teams who won't make a decision until maybe 2 o'clock on March 8th, Eastern time. But you will see some movement. You know, Anaheim, teams are scouting Anaheim like crazy right now. You do know that there are some players, you know, what's Ottawa going to do with Vladimir Tarasenko? There are some players who look like they should definitely be on the move. I do think, though, it's so fluid right now that we're not really going to have a sense of it, you know, probably for 3 or 4 more weeks. Although I will say, as I finally get to the end of this answer, that to me, the GMs who can make a move earlier than later, and, you know, like the Jamie Drysdale move, now that's a real hockey trade, right, of two high-end prospects. But Jamie Drysdale has stepped right in and made an immediate impact for the Philadelphia Flyers. He's going to help them stay in that playoff hunt. If you can make a move as a GM that allows a player to come in and get, acclimatized and settled into a new system, you are so much further ahead than if you're making a move on March 8th. And really what you're talking about is 5 or 6 weeks to get a guy into a groove. And sometimes it doesn't happen. And we haven't even talked anything about goaltending, which is a whole other issue, because it's so much more difficult in my mind to bring in a goaltender midstream if you are expecting a goaltender to play meaningful minutes and maybe be your starter down the stretch. That's even harder. The odds are even higher against you, I think.
Yeah, and I'm not sure I can recall the last time a major goaltender was traded at the trading deadline. I mean, they seem to me like they're moves that are made in the offseason, whether by trade or free agency. It's all like, I can't, and maybe you can help me with that. I can't think of one that was like, you know, and maybe, and I hate to say it, it goes back to like Barrasso, you know, in the Doug Bodger trade, in the 80s, because I'm trying to think, like, because there's a lot of talk about Jarry. There's a lot of talk, even in the offseason, we heard Johnny Gibson's name thrown around, Connor Hellebuck's name thrown around there. Now, you know, who knows what's going on there? And there are some teams that I think, like you mentioned, in that mushy middle that could cut both ways. And here, you know, Kyle Dubas is in a real awkward situation. He's got a fan base that wants to keep the team together, but he's got an expiring contract with a free agent that he might not be able to pay, even with the bump in the salary cap in the offseason of Jake Gensel. And with the right team and the right deal, he can get a player and a prospect and a draft pick or whatever he wants to do there. And he's got a couple of those. Like the Erik Karlsson stuff we mentioned a few minutes ago. When Karlsson came here to have a shot at a cup and to get off of San Jose's roster, and they're not sure they're making it in. And I know there's a lot of teams like that too, which is really interesting. But I don't want to digress too far down this rabbit hole, but you mentioned Drysdale a couple of times, so I have to talk about it. I mean, what a crazy, nutty – like, to this day, I'm not sure really what happened, you know, with Connor Gauthier and the Flyers. Now, as a Penguin fan myself, I really don't care. But you know, whatever happened there was just so awkward. It just sounded like that was doomed from the start. And I think the Flyers did everything they could to professionally handle it the right way. And the way they answered the questions, they were honest, they were open, which you don't often get. I think I've been spoiled here in the city over the last few years with, you know, Jim Rutherford, who would just say anything at any time, anywhere. He was as open as any kind of book. Not everybody plays their hand that way, but listening to, you know, the Flyer leadership from the tippy top on down, whether, you know, it was Jones or Torts or whomever, they were pretty open about it. It's like, hey, the guy didn't want to be here. We moved him. We got what we got for him. And then the other teams around the league seem to be giving them some latitude with it. They're almost like, all right, we get it. We all might be in this situation one way. We're going to keep it silent. And they did it. And I don't know if that would happen in any other sport like that. Like, I can't see it's just such a strange culture, but it was good. What's your read on the whole thing?
Well, I think there are a couple things about it. And actually, you know, you twigged it to me when you talk about what does the Pittsburgh fan base want. And, you know, that's a whole other show, I think. But, you know, what do people in Pittsburgh really want as, you know, as the light starts to go out on this? And I'll use, again, my air quote, you know, the dynastic Penguins. You know, what does the fan base really want? And how closely or should ownership and management, do they care? Should they listen? But I think the Flyers are a great example of why it's important to be in tune with the people who ultimately pay the freight, right? I mean, people stopped coming to Flyers games a few years ago, right? I mean, this is one of the greatest hockey markets anywhere in the world. I don't care. Canada, U.S., it's a great hockey town. It has been that way for decades. But people stopped coming. And they stopped coming in large part because I think the organization lost its way. They were without direction. And I'm not talking about not winning the Stanley Cup since the mid-70s, which is the reality. But it's, well, what does it mean to be a Flyer? What do we stand for? What's our identity? I mean, it's all cliche stuff, but it's all real stuff. And I really do think that Danny Briere and Keith Jones and, you know, one of my favorite guys in hockey, Alan McCauley's now in the executive, you know, in that upper management circle, really smart hockey people. And I think, why not tell people what you're doing? Like, I think you owe it to your fan base to keep them engaged when all of a sudden a guy who just was the top four at the World Junior Championships gets dealt to the Anaheim Ducks. Now, Jamie Drysdale's been he made an immediate impact. He's going to be fine. You know, Cutter Gauthier, who knows what his future is. He may be, you know, a star on a resurgent Ducks team in the next 2 or 3 years. But I think management telling the fan base, hey, we tried to sign him. We tried to talk to him. He decided he didn't want to. And I think it's a cautionary tale for all kinds of teams because, you know, the whole structure is teams draft. And when you're lousy, you get better players when you draft in theory. And they come into your system and they help make you better. Well, yeah, you know, some players just decide that's not a fit for me. I don't want to be there. And whatever the reason is, maybe it's family, maybe it's, you know, whatever the rationale is, then you can't make them do it. So you have to decide as an organization, what are we going to do with a player who's decided he doesn't want to follow the path that's set out there? And, you know, I know I love the steak place in the Philly area has already banned Cutter Gauthier from going to any of their steak outlets moving forward. You know, I love that kind of passion. But, you know, and I don't know, I don't profess to know exactly what it was that Cutter Gauthier decided along with his family and his representation, hey, this is not going to be a fit for us. We're, you know, this is just how it's going to work. So figure it out. And they did figure it out. And it does, you know, I can see where teams would be like, geez, I hope that doesn't happen to us. But I think the Flyers did a nice job of it. You know, Anaheim obviously gets a very high-end offensive talent. We'll see what happens with Cutter Gauthier there. But, you know, and I do like the transparency with the fan base because I think at some point, you know, sometimes teams and sometimes executives lose sight of the fact that, you know, we need to be open and we need to tell our team's story. And sometimes that's a hard story to tell. Like the Penguins are going to go through this, right? If they miss the playoffs again this year, what is the story you tell your fans? Because at some point they're going to stop coming if they don't believe the story or if the story's too ugly to hear or they feel somehow that whatever they think or feel no one cares about that. Like, I'm not saying that's going to happen, but it did happen in Philly. And I really think that that's, it's important to be able to repair that and by saying, hey, you pay our freight. So we're going to try and tell you as much as we can about what we're doing moving forward. And, to me, I am so fascinated. You know, I covered Sidney Crosby's first game. I spent a lot of time around Sidney Crosby over the years. I was fortunate, was at his home when they won the cup in 09. And, you know, he's at the end of the 24-25 season, he's going to be a UFA. And I'm just curious about what will happen and what kinds of discussions and what's the plan moving forward, especially if you miss the playoffs for a second straight year, because you always say never, but, you know, Zdeno Chara ended up in a different jersey at the end, and, you know, Ray Bourque in Colorado, and, you know, go down the list. I know he never played, but Henrik Lundqvist, you know, technically left the New York Rangers. So, you know, these things happen, and sometimes it will be time. And I'm just curious to see how this plays out, because it's hard to imagine Sidney Crosby in anything but Pittsburgh colors wearing 87. But there may be a time that comes where that story has to be rewritten, or that the final chapter is going to be different than people would want it to be.
Yeah, you know, I hope they handle it the way that the Rangers did with their fans a few years back, where they put an open letter in the paper.
Yeah.
And we're like, hey, you know what? We're going to deconstruct and we're going to rebuild, and this is going to be painful, but we're doing it for the betterment of the team. And, you know, look, the Rangers, you know, they're not back, right? Let's be honest. I mean, the rebuild hasn't gone as smooth. They had a good season last year, but just didn't get to where they needed to be just yet. But they were honest with their fans, and they didn't lose their way, as you kind of described with Philly, and that's the worst thing you can have. And there's a sophisticated fan base in Pittsburgh that understands that, you know, and they've seen other dynastic runs come to end here with the Lemieux faction, and or if you migrate into other sports, you know, you've had the Steelers multiple times doing that. But, you know, I think that as long as they're honest with the fan base, and it's a new ownership group. They don't have the friendlies of the Mary Lemieux and the goodwill that's in the community. The Fenway group has really has to take a real hometown look, because that's what this market is going to bear in Pittsburgh. So we'll see. But yeah, Scott, we're coming to the end of the show here. We only got a couple minutes left. I'm going to squeeze in one last question before I tell you to tell everybody where they can find you. I love to hate this last move, but this week we got some big news in the coaching carousel with Patrick Waugh going to the Islanders. Again, a Metro division foe of my beloved Pittsburgh Penguins. What's your take on that in 30 seconds or less? And, you know, good move, bad move, indifferent to it. What are your thoughts on Waugh going to the Islanders?
Yeah, no, I think it's good for the game. I like the idea that he's back there, just given how fiery he is. I covered him when he came to Colorado the first time as a head coach. He won Jack Adams in the first year, nearly beat up Bruce Boudreau after his first game. I mean, it's all, you know, there's lots of drama, and, you know, he's one of the greatest players of all time. So I totally understand it. I'm not a huge fan of how that Islander team is built. And I wrote about this the other day, and, you know, with all due respect to Lou Lamoriello, that's, you know, there's sort of a mythology that's been built up about the New York Islanders GM. And I'm not sure it's borne out, you know, when you look at his track record in New Jersey after the 2004-05 lockout, you look at his work in Toronto, you look at his work with the Islanders, two trips to the Eastern Conference Final, but I give Barry Trotz all kinds of credit as the coach there. Then he fired Barry Trotz. To me, they're a bubble team. Maybe they make the playoffs with Patrick Roy, but they're not a team that's built for sustainable success, I don't think. And that's not just this year. They were the same the last 2 years. They'll be the same moving forward. So I just don't know. I don't know how Patrick Roy solves all that. But, you know, maybe we'll have this conversation in mid-May and the Islanders are charging through the Eastern Conference and I'll eat some crow on it. But, you know, I think it's good to have Patrick Roy in the game. I just don't see that he can fix what actually ails the Islanders, and that's how that roster is constructed.
Well, Scott, thank you very much for being on Draft Nation tonight. Appreciate that. I'd love to have you back as we get closer to the trade deadline. And tell everybody real quick where they can find you.
Sure. I'm on Twitter, Overtime Scott B, and so you can hang around there. And I have a newsletter, Burnside on Hockey. So, you know, check that out if you have a mind. And, that's where you can catch me. And I've had a ton of fun, so thanks for having me aboard.
Well, it's been my pleasure. And, again, thanks to our sponsor, iHeartMedia, where you can find all your favorite music, radio, and podcasts all for free. And remember, while Draft Nation may be off the air, we are always on the clock for you. Thanks again, Scott. We'll have you back soon.
Take care.
See you.